Welcome to Storyboard. I'm Lars.
I'm Meg.
We reappraise overlooked movies and TV and pitch films that need to be made. Button up, buckle down, and strap in. Today we're discussing fashion and style, our past inspirations, our current obsessions, and future quests. Pull up a chair, baby. So here is a good little glimpse into my brain as a tween teen. Mm-hmm. I also remembered that I kept an outfit journal from about 7th grade till graduation.
High school?
All throughout junior high and high school, I kept an outfit journal. I didn't have like a digital camera at that point, so I literally was just like, I might sketch something or whatever. Yeah. But I kept a journal so I wouldn't repeat outfits. So every single school day, I would write down what I might plan in advance, but it was mostly just like, okay, I have a bad memory for this stuff and I don't want to repeat outfits because somehow that's really important.
So you never repeated outfits?
I did repeat them, but I would make sure there was like a buffer, or like a good like 3 or 4 week buffer, you know?
Wow.
And then my so-called friend told all the cool kids that I did this, and then everyone made fun of me.
Oh,
and I was like, but look who's laughing now, because now there's like Instagram, like outfit of the day.
Yeah,
and like people are constantly doing that. So I don't know.
That's what a terrible
vengeance
friend
is mine. So anyway, I don't know. So
wow, that's a real Mean Girls experience.
Yeah. I mean, it's a weird dorky thing to do. But
I mean, not that weird though. I feel like kids do all kinds of weird shit. Who the hell knows?
So anyway, that's just a glimpse into
the curtain and look.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. A glimpse into the Hurt Locker. So, a big old rummage round. So, fashion, style, movies. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to think of, I guess I wasn't going for any movies that were like fashion industry, like no documentary. I mean, which is, you know, fine and very entertaining, but I wasn't going for like things that were like fashion industry movies. I was going for more like style inspiration.
Yeah, I started out when you said fashion because I don't think about it as much as you do. I was like, oh, I'll just do something about fashion industry, but actually that was like really hard to do. There's not that many films that like I've seen some, but they're not good or
they're not even
interesting, like bad in a fun way.
Mm-hmm.
And then my next thought was like, oh, I'll do films that have like a fashion item or clothing item in the title, but that was also kind of like a snooze
and
a bust.
Like
high heels. Found some treats, but maybe also drew in, it's more of like just general style. It's not really clothes for me. Like there's some cool looks, but it's like, oh, the interiors and the fabrics and the mood.
Art direction and the whole vibe.
Yeah, is kind of the direction that I went because I kind of struggled with it. Like I said, I went through a couple
phases.
Options. Yeah, and I was like, well, that's a bust. And
yeah,
I was just short on time, so movies, like there are movies that I just didn't finish. Well, that's not going to work. So
you're like, the next.
Yeah. I only have so much time in this world.
Yeah, not totally.
I don't know if you went for like a particular look that you wanted to talk about.
Well, I accidentally fell into a late 70s, early 80s, as I oft do. That's kind of my favorite style era for some reason. It's definitely, I mean, German, French. I would love to have expanded, but once I found the three I liked, I was like, okay, these are the ones I want to talk about. So these aren't my like all-time favorite top fashion inspiration movies, but these are just the ones that I found along the way, which is what we do here.
I don't think anyone here is ever going to claim that it's like the ultimate.
These are the top three.
Definitely not.
So the first one I found right away that I'm dying over. It's so good. Subway from 1985, Luc Besson. It's French. So we got Christopher Lambert of Highlander, I think.
Oh.
And P.S., he looks exactly like Bronson Pinchot from, what's that called? The sitcom, like Perfect Strangers.
Really?
I think you'd know him from First Wives Club. He's like the interior decorator.
Oh,
it's the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
As I was watching this movie, I was like, he looks just like Bronson Pinchot.
Weird.
It's just very, I don't know. So, just side note on that.
Yeah.
So, Christopher Lambert is a charming little scamp He'll steal your jewels and steal your heart. That's my tagline for the movie. So we see him in a big subway station in Paris on the run from authorities after robbing Isabelle Adjani at her ritzy mansion. The majority of the film is set in the subway, as you can imagine, where we see Lambert interact with a cast of characters from thieves and musicians to the transit bureaucrats and security guards who try to catch them. The subway folk work their schemes and legitimate businesses in the Paris metro station by day and then live and sleep in like hidden rooms and tunnels in the underground by night. So these people are like, they're not like mole people, you know what I mean? But they're just like, they found these little like nooks and crannies to like live in there, you know, fair enough.
They're not rat boys.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And Lambert fits right in and hides out there while he's waiting for things to cool off with Isabelle. There's a whole flirty, like, cat-and-mouse tete-a-tete between the two of them. And, like, she's constantly kind of, like, visiting and trying to talk to, like, the bureaucrats there. Like, hey, you need to find him or whatever. And she's got, like, a rich husband. Again, this was, I saw this, like, about a month ago at this point. So I'm kind of, I'm a little fuzzy. Hey, don't blame me. I'm a little fuzzy. I'm like, I'm pretty sure she's married. Anyway, so we find out that Lambert pretty much robbed her as a sort of like aggressive way of flirting with her.
Oh,
which women love. I love
it. Just like have my personal property stolen.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think he just like stole some papers or something and like he was just like, I just wanted to like see you again. Kind of, you know, something like that. You know, he met her. Like he robbed her at this like hoity toity party. Like when he arrives at the subway first thing, he's like wearing a tux. And then, anyways, so I'll get to his style in a second. But, so it's a comedy. The stakes are pretty low, so you get to just have fun watching these, like, underground dudes evade the police. Sometimes on roller skates. This one guy's, like, wearing roller skates the whole movie. And in the end, yes. Yeah, it's one of the, a lot of colorful characters. In the end, this group of guys, like, these underground guys, take over this concert, this music concert that for some reason's happening at the subway station.
Okay.
You know how that goes. So that's a crazy ending. So nothing Besson has done post-90s has really appealed to me visually, but damn. I wish he'd stayed on like this track.
Yeah.
Because the cinematography, the art direction is, dare I say, flawless? Or at least like perfectly encapsulated, like it's a complete mood.
Yeah.
And so you would think that, like, the highlight would be Isabelle Adjani's, like, spoiled rich lady looks, because it's, like, the pinnacle of 80s excess. It's, like, giant blazers, giant earrings, crazy hairdos, furs, and that is great, and that's eye-catching. But I think they really went the extra mile by dressing, like, Lambert and the gang. Just, I don't know, these really interesting outfits. Like, Lambert is wearing an outfit, or different outfits throughout the film that I would fully, like, if a guy wore it today, it would be like, oh, wow, you're a stylish man. Like, it fully fits in today. It's crazy. And bonus, we get to see a young Jean Renault, famous as, like, the professional, future Besson project. So we see young Jean Renault looking fine, which is great. Like it, because I don't really clock him as a sexual being. Really, I was like, oh, he's an attractive guy.
By the time I've seen like movies with him,
yeah, exactly. And so you see him young in this sort of like street punk wear, and he's like famous little tiny round glasses he wears in like every movie, and he's like a drummer. Because again, there's like a musical element to this. There's like a band, and I'm fully, completely obsessed with him now, and I'm completely in love with him. Wow. So, I don't know. It was a surprise. So, it is not available on any platforms at the moment, but if you Google it and, I mean, you know, you can. There's a good streaming file on, like, page one of Google if you just type this in. And I've seen this site around. There's, like, a Russian, I think it's, like, a Russian YouTube site called, like, OK.ru or something. And so it's like Russian YouTube, I think, pretty much. But there's, like, a lot of full movies on there. So that's a new little something or another I found. Anyways, I think it's on there. So it's not terribly hard to track down, but definitely worth a watch.
Interesting. I've never heard of it. Must be one of his earlier
films? So 85, so I think it was his second feature-length film. Okay. And after that, he did, like, Big Blue and stuff. And, you know, he's known for, like, Fifth Element, which I've always seemed a little much for me. I don't know. It's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of, like, that kind of fisheye sort of, like, Terry Gilliam sort of.
That's a good comparison.
Kind of, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not into that. But his early few things, I've seen Big Blue, and it's really fun, and, like, in this. And, so it's... Yeah, it's a. I think if we did a year-end wrap-up, you know, at the end of this year, it would definitely be in the top, like, surprising vintage finds. That was a surprise.
Especially when you think about the director's, like, later work, like you said. Because I think maybe one of the dumbest movies I've ever seen is his movie with ScarJo.
Yeah, Lucy.
Yeah.
I know, and I was like, oh, damn, the last few things he's done is like that, and like the Valerian, whatever. Yeah, just like,
tough times.
So, early work, though, definitely worth a watch. I wish he'd stayed on that track.
Yeah. So, mine, maybe I mentioned this, maybe I didn't. Who's to say? I just picked a movie from 70s, 80s, and 90s and just picked them because I liked the way they looked.
Yeah. Well, that's why we're here.
Just in general.
Yeah.
So the first one is The Carolian Witness, which is sometimes known as The Plants Are Watching from 1979. It was directed by Jonathan Sarno. Really didn't direct a lot of other things. It's sort of like a very independently financed film in the 70s, but I think it's ready for its comeback.
All right.
Or first come up. Yeah,
would it become so now?
Sorry, yeah,
that sounds...
Come now?
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've heard of or seen that book, The Secret Life of Plants, that's all about like plant energies, plant communication. It's a very 70s pseudoscience kind of book that's like, oh, you can like take photographs of plants and their auras will show like certain different emotions. Right. And it's like very like that style of 70s pseudoscience.
Well, so, sounds pretty fun.
Of the moment, pseudoscience is like all up in
that. We're all about some pseudoscience.
But this one at least is like less harmful than other kinds.
Yeah.
So this one is kind of taking that notion, like that was very much like in the ether, like the cultural ether, I think, of the time, and turning it into a thriller. So it might be the first/only botanical thriller. I'm not sure.
There's an Australian horror film. Sorry, I'm trying to think what it's called. It's like The Weeknd or something where a couple's in the woods and it's,
So maybe there's a little...
I don't know if that's the right title, but there's an Australian thriller like that's called, This Couple's in the Woods. And
There's a few like sci-fi movies from like later on that are bad that I won't mention.
But yeah, sorry, that just like sprung to mind and I was like, oh, that's a pretty good one because they're camping and nature's like, fuck you. But yes,
This one, The Plants Are Your Friends. So basically this woman, so it takes place in downtown New York, I think, maybe it's Soho, who the hell knows, somewhere that was like in 70s and it's being gentrified by art galleries and that's like noted by the voiceover of the protagonist but you still have these amazing walk-ups, so like these lofts with like, you know, walls of windows, there's like a roof deck and all that stuff, but it's just like really unstructured kind of like, you know, really rough. You're like, how is there like this beautiful bathroom in this seemingly like just like a big box kind of apartment? But this girl owns a plant shop and she's really into Carolian photography and plant communication. And she's kind of one of those 70s gals that's like a denim jumper and kind of like tight high-waisted denim and like, you know, embroidered blouses, but she's mostly just cares about her plants, doesn't really care about anybody else. And she's murdered and her plants are the witness, and her sister, who lives in the same building, is listening to a tape recording that her sister made and figures out that this whole kind of connects the dots and it's like, I'm going to try to communicate with the plants.
Oh my god.
Basically that was the main witness.
Yeah.
So the woman actually kind of goes into this rabbit hole of trying to figure out who murdered her sister by communicating with the plants and doing photography of the energies of the plants. And so there's a couple of suspects that are very close.
Yeah.
And there's actually one of them, you're like, is this person a suspect or just the creepiest person in the world? But there's just a lot of great, high-waisted denim, sort of stripy tops, just like huge collars, just the bigger, the better. Very normal collars. And like I said, just that great kind of New York downtown vibe.
It's a favorite.
And it's definitely a film for the plant lover. I saw, just even seeing the blurb, I don't even know where I read about it. I was like, I have to see this movie.
Yeah.
Can't wait. And it's also just, I think one of the scenes is shot in one of the early vegetarian restaurants in the 70s there. So it's kind of its own artifact of a particular like community and culture of New York at the time.
Like an Alice Waters style.
Yeah.
Kind of like.
Totally. Yeah.
Farm table.
And just what people kind of thought about and talked about at the time. So it's honestly real fun. You definitely don't know where things are going.
Yeah, I mean.
And it's got some interesting women characters. I think it would actually make a great double feature with that Argento movie we talked about a while ago, Phenomenon, where Jennifer Connelly communicates with the bees, and the bees help her solve a crime. Yeah. Like, maybe, like, the bees and plants sort of working in tandem.
Yeah. I was going to say the birds and the bees, but the plants and the bees.
Flora and fauna, kind of. I feel like those would be a good doubleheader. And it definitely, it's like, maybe that's the only sort of patently irrational thing that I kind of not buy into. I definitely don't buy into plant communication. But I do have certain things with my plants where I like to keep them grouped together. And if there's like a mother and a baby plant, I sort of let them be near each other. And I kind of feel like they have their own little biomes that they're in. So
I know what you mean,
the sister is probably extreme with that, but I think her relationship to her plants, I think, would be relatable to a lot of us who take care of little plant friends and creatures. Yeah. So
I know sometimes I'll try to have like certain plants, like if they're not like, this sounds weird, like touching leaves, I'll be like, well, they want to like, it's like they're holding hands. Yeah. Like, so if one plant's not doing so well, maybe I'll like reposition it, put it next to like another plant that's doing well, and I'll kind of make sure their leaves are touching. So maybe that's psycho, but it seems like it, you know, makes sense, right?
An ecologist who's at UBC who's doing work, and she has a forthcoming book about multi-generational plant tree communities in sort of the Salish kind of area, and how they allocate resources amongst themselves, and how they actually use fungus and mushrooms to like transmit certain nutrients from one to another. And her work is actually very based in her scientific field work, but she also talks about that a lot of people who live in that area, like indigenous communities, have kind of had oral traditions that point to those kind of relationships for a long time. So there's actually some interesting underpinning to that again makes me sound really woo-woo, but there's a legitimate
scientific basis
for just the way that living things communicate and allocate resources.
It's not that crazy
So that's getting far afield from fashion, so you can kind of see.
Well, and that kind of reminds me, I was going to mention, or that made me think of, there's an Instagram, it kind of ties back to sort of fashion inspiration, Instagram, whatever. There's an Instagram that's called, like, Plants in Seinfeld or Plants of Seinfeld I follow, you know, that's fun. And I bought some of their calendars before, just kind of random stills of Seinfeld with the plants in the background. And how I wish, and maybe there is, and I just don't know about it, like a Tumblr and Instagram that's like maybe plants of like Columbo. I want like the plant design of Columbo is very good. So I just, I would
all
appreciate
the interiors.
All the, honestly, Columbo a full interiors. Yeah. Instagram, whatever, some sort of account of just the full interiors of Columbo. Specifically the plant design. I don't know. Someone just needs to get on that.
Yeah.
Because
do that work.
I don't want to do the work, but I want to appreciate it. So it definitely ties into fashion. Well, my next one is Women of New York, 1977. So some late 70s vibes over here by famous director Rainer Werner Fassbinder. I would be... Yeah, I'll get to that. I would be remiss if I didn't mention at least one film by this darling of new German cinema. So I could mention almost any of his 40-plus films, but this is just the one I came across. And I can't remember how many I've seen, but, you know, like I've seen a dozen, 15 or so. I didn't know when I started this that this was a remake of one of my favorite sort of childhood, I mean, you know, early films that I loved. Okay, so this could get confusing, so just chronologically. Okay. The Women... was a hit play written by, I don't know if it's Claire Booth, like Luce or Lucy or Luce, but it's L-U-C-E. So I forgot to look that up. But anyways, so it was written by her in 1936, made into a film by George Cukor in 1939. Fassbinder directed a stage version of the play, I believe in Hamburg in the 1970s at some point. Couldn't find a lot of good records about that. So anyway, and then this is a film version of the play that he directed, and it was made for German television. So I was just like, I don't know the clearest way to express all of that it was a play, that was a movie, and then a play and a movie for German television. So technically this is a TV movie.
He made a number of those, didn't he?
I mean, I think like I I don't know how to, like, look into this, but I feel like European television was just so good about, like, oh, hey, like, their television movies are not Lifetime movies.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Bergman did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's, I'm sure there's probably like, some great book about, I don't know,
I'm
the
sure.
history of that, and I would love to look into that, because it's very interesting to me, so opposite of, I mean, I guess the in America in the 50s, there was, like, craft theater, mm-hmm. and some of that, like, live plays on TV, which is amazing to me, that I also don't know much about, but that I guess that was our golden era there. Okay, so The Women is a play about gossip and marriage and divorce in high society in New York with an all-woman cast. So synopsis really quick is the lead, Mary Haynes, finds out that her husband is cheating on her with a lowly shop girl at the perfume counter of a department store named Crystal. So Mary eventually confronts her husband and, like, bluffs that she wants a divorce. She goes to Reno for a quickie divorce, which is 6 weeks because you have to establish residency.
Oh, yeah.
It's a whole thing in this era. So her husband immediately marries the other woman. And then after, like, sulking for a year, Mary uses all the catty gossipy techniques of her gal pals to expose that the other woman, Crystal, is now cheating on her current husband or whatever. So Mary can win back her husband, if that makes any sense. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's just basically a bunch of, like, women that are gossiping and,
it's,
you know.
Proto Real Housewives.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously it's terribly antiquated, but it's just, like, a lot of campy fun.
Yeah.
There's every stereotypical kind of woman. You got the ideal wife, Mary, innocent newlywed, this, like, one woman that's just constantly pregnant, this countess who has been married just a number of times, always looking for love still. Then the Crystal, the shop girl who marries up. There's a showgirl and this feminist author who is sort of above it all. And then some, like, several other characters. And then I was just going to say, the Q-Core film leans a little bit more into the comedic sense of it, but still dramatic. But and then Fassbender leads more into the melodrama. But it's still, like, a blast. The sets are this static stage sets, beautifully decorated, and all the women have these gorgeous, like, 30s-inspired gowns and, like, stunning, kind of weird hairdos and makeup. You know, they're really extreme. And so it may not be the best entry point if you haven't seen a lot of Fassbender, but it's, like, a good deep cut if you've watched a few of his other things. You're like, I want more. Or if you just happen to be, like, a big fan of theater or of, like,
yeah,
The Women,
interesting.
The movie. And so this is where I give the disclaimer that Fassbender has a reputation of physical abuse towards his actresses. He would put, like, a lot of his friends and family in his movies.
Yeah.
And so his, like, personal secretary was in this film and in a lot of his others. And he was apparently really horrible to her. So obviously I don't want to condone that behavior, but it's like you're kind of torn when the cast and crew did such a phenomenal job. And so I don't want that to be erased. So, you know, it's a bummer that he's shitty, but
how shitty was he? I mean, not to
I know,
be
that's
an apologist.
The thing. It's hard because
I mean, he wasn't straight.
He was, like, bisexual, definitely leaning more towards gay.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe there was just, like, a misogyny running.
Right.
I don't know how he was with male actors, honestly.
Yeah.
And this is, I hate to be like, it was just physical abuse and emotional
right.
abuse. But so I don't know distinct, like, specific stories, so that's why I don't want to, like, blow it
right.
out or in a,
yeah.
you know what I mean? I don't
kind
know
the
proportionality.
Same thing, right? It's just, like, this vague sense, but then I'm like, what?
I think he was just a fucking jerk.
Well,
he
did a lot of drugs.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. So I think he just had a lot of different problems. So I'm just saying, keep that in mind.
Yeah,
I just
totally.
Feel like I need to say
yeah, totally,
that.
Yeah, totally, totally.
But again, he, like, there were movies are collaborations. It's, like, the one art form that is the most collaborative. So I hate to just be like, well, this one dude that was kind of the boss was a jerk or abusive, so the end, and we should, like, throw these movies in the garbage. I'm like, there's a lot of people that worked really hard and did great work. And so if you want to see this, it is available on the site that I was being very cagey about last time. Should I say it? Should I just say it?
I don't know.
Or should we just
you could probably
try
get
to keep
DVD
it
on DVD from the library?
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
So,
yeah. But I kind of like being mysterious. So just message us. I got some nice DMs. Just basically, message us if you want the name of this mysterious site, which I will mention again.
Like,
sorry, now I will. I'm sure I'll mention it next episode. But now I kind of like being mysterious.
Yeah, sure.
So But yeah, it's out there. Maybe the library as well. I'm not sure.
I just feel like I see a lot of hit, like, any university with a film program will have a ton of his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Film professors, I think, really like him. And
yeah,
there's just, like, whole libraries just
bursting.
Yeah. So speaking of... Okay, no, I don't want to make that connection because she it's not abusive people, but people who have difficult themes in their movies and not everyone finds them accessible.
Mm-hmm.
So my 80s pick is by Lena Burtt-Mueller, and actually it's a movie that Lars had used the title of, I think, for a pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe?
Yeah. No,
I believe that's correct.
Yeah.
Summer Night. So it's starting with Summer Night, but Summer Night with Greek Profile, Almond Eyes, and a Basil is the full title.
It's great.
So...
I mean, the title. I haven't seen the movie.
No, it is. Well, I enjoy the vibe, but she is sort of known for investigating class and race and sexual dynamics in a way that some people find uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
She is an avowed feminist and socialist. I think that's important to know going in. When you see a film that may have some things that make you uncomfortable, you have to ask yourself, is the filmmaker showing me this to, like, challenge me on something and not necessarily to be like, oh, no big deal.
Yeah.
And I think that's, like, a really key thing that... one has to consider. So I do think context is important. I don't think the art can exist in a vacuum. So this movie has Maria Angela Mulatto, who's she's this blonde bombshell that was in, I think, a number of her movies and Italian movies, and then Michelle Placido. So those are the two leads. Mulatto is this, how do I put this? She is an eco-capitalist. It's very forward-thinking. It's a very 80s. It's like, it was like the Trumpian 80s, and now we're back. Oh, we're back in that zone now. So she is someone who made all of her money doing things like cleaning up oil spills, but she's an avowed capitalist and very classist, but she's also a bad bitch. So it's really conflicted because she decides that she is going to... She's tired of, you know, in Italy there was a lot of, and throughout Europe and a lot of places in the 70s, there was a lot of what was deemed at the time by authority figures to be sort of terrorist acts by rabble-rousers, leftists, anarchists, those type of groups that had a political agenda. So she decides that her friends have been kidnapped too many times, they've paid too many ransoms, and she is going to one of these... terrorist, she is going to kidnap him and give him a taste of his own goddamn medicine.
Oh,
okay.
Shit.
And so she actually, there's just a lot of, like, winking nods to the sort of social dynamics of the 70s, because she actually hires this operative who is, you know, like, wink wink, like, works for the CIA and works to kind of repress leftist movements all around the world. She hires him to do this covert ops to capture this particular quote terrorist who's played by Placido, and even though he's kind of this rebel and sort of set up as this leftist, he's this brutish, kind of disgusting misogynist.
Yeah.
So there's no heroes, but they all kind of have some aspects that are interesting here, except for the CIA guy. He just is a monster.
Oh,
just like in real life.
Yeah.
So she, first of all, trounces around in the most incredible 80s, it's LeMay, you've got these amazing hair wraps, huge earrings, these gorgeous two-piece outfits, maybe there's like a takeaway piece. It's just, it's like look, she looks so good.
Ugh.
We're watching it, and every time she came on this on the screen, I would literally be like, oh my god, yes!
Yes!
Yes. So good. So she takes this guy, and he is her prisoner on her private island. Sure.
Sure, why not?
This just consists of this big castle. I need to look up, it seems like maybe it'd be in the Adriatic, I'm not really sure.
Hmm.
But she kind of has him as her captive, and it's funny because she doesn't want him to see her face so he can't retaliate, because she always plans to release him after he's basically paid this ransom.
Okay.
So she has him in this very BDSM looking little getup where his little eyes are like,
I think I've seen those stills.
In this harness. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
And she has him, she wants to treat him humanely, so she has him kind of tied up, but in a, he can move around. And yeah. that's important because let me tell you, there's a whole softcore scene involving them because they have this real back and forth
chemistry.
Yeah. And then it just goes from there. It's funny and kind of a wild ride. And there's definitely some tough things going on because it's an 80s movie from Italy. So, Vibert Mueller, who there's a lot of sexual dynamics and violence in her movies, so just a big old warning on that whole thing.
Yeah.
But it's honestly really fun, and it's hard. Like, I challenge you to not find the protagonist somewhat charming, even if she's this horrible millionaire capitalist, mm-hmm. because she's a sassy broad.
Yeah. I love it.
And I just think the looks are amazing. It's just got this sort of excess, this era of 80s excess. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely no one in the film that comes off looking like a true hero. So it's just a fun way to spend some time and see a lady in some sexy outfits and a guy in a little harness, some great bikinis. It's just,
that's all I want.
It's really fun. It's on Criterion right now, but weirdly, I think they're rotating all of her films off because maybe they were highlighting them for a few months. Okay. So it's around. I've seen it other places.
Okay. That makes me think, should we on the show have, like, I'm trying to think what to call it, like, when things are dicey, like a dice-o-meter? Like, where's this on the scale? You know what I mean?
This one wouldn't be too bad.
Too bad, okay.
Because she has, like, a couple from the 70s that are, like, it's, like, fully, like a sexual assault. But then the movie's
it's
really,
like,
good.
How are they handling it? Yeah. And what's the awareness factor or the, the context factor?
Yeah, and it's not treated very seriously. But then, I don't know. You just gotta, people treat things differently depending on different social contexts and time periods. And
and like the campiness sometimes too. It's like, it's really bad, but it's so campy. Then we can, like, forgive it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this one's pretty campy. I mean, it's a treat. It would be tragic to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying with all this. I mean, come on. Yeah. At least get those stills.
And,
you know?
I mean, she's still with us. She's still living. And she's the cutest, tiniest lady in the world.
No, totally. Some great glasses. Every time I see her, she has some great eyeglasses on. All right, so for my last one, it's Ticket of No Return from 1979 by German director Ulrike Oettinger. Not sure I'm pronouncing that right, but I got to see this at Church of Film here in Portland a while ago, and I knew right away I wanted to save it for our eventual fashion episode. So that also means I might be, again, a little fuzzy on the details. Yep. But it's a pretty simple premise. A woman arrives in Berlin, rents a hotel room, dresses in some of the best outfits I've seen in cinema, honestly, and drinks to excess in these different various bars. But, like, it sounds weird, but in this kind of relatable way of drinking, not in, like, a whole, like, lost weekend, super sad, gut-wrenching, dramatic, alcoholic way, if that makes sense. Like, you know, I'm usually railing against movies that, like, lean on alcoholism and drug addiction as, like, a crutch for plot and motivation. It's not that. This is just, like, we've all been there, you know, like, hey, let's have a few, you know. So it's, like, fun drinking. It's probably a bit sadder than I'm willing to admit. But because I can't help but see a bit of my, like, the aspirations of my younger self, that sort of romanticized kind of, again, like, drinking and, you know, like, I'm being so, like, you know, when you're young and you're just like, I don't know, like, I'm
Wait, what
such
is
a
she
mess.
Actually doing?
Basically, like, okay. She's just, literally, that's it. She's just wearing gorgeous outfits and drinking.
Oh,
that's
okay.
it. That's the movie.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
I'm not, like, that's literally, that's why I'm really harping on it.
Okay.
But I'm like, but it's, like, fun drinking. Sorry. As far as her outfits, I believe the lead actor, Tabia Blumenschein, also designed her costumes for the film, and they are just indescribably gorgeous. And some of them are really ahead of their time. If it's 1979, they actually look very, like, I mean, I'm not super into, like, mid-80s outfits usually, but I'm just saying, but it still has that effect, these sort of, like, big shoulders and really bold looks. So for 79, like, she's just wildly ahead of her time. So I know I at least reference Aki Kaurismäki way too much as, like, a shorthand for those sort of, like, not much dialogue, not much plot, charming, a bit sad but nihilistic films. But it is a bit of, like, Aki with, like, a heavy splash of Fassbender. But Oettinger is, like, a breath of, like, fresh feminist lesbian air in that sort of like male-dominated nude German cinema world. So it's like, if you were like, oh, I don't know about Fassbender, I don't know if I want to, you know, go there, then Ottinger, you still got the style. And it's sort of experimental. Like, a lot of her films are kind of experimental, but these are the kind that I can fully get behind. Like, again, just eye candy. So her films are a little hard to track down, but I believe they are on my mystery site. Sorry. No, okay. I will, next episode, I won't be such a weirdo about it. So basically,
once you've watched all the movies you want
yeah,
to.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so just DM me if you, you know, want a link or something. But yeah, if you're looking for some wild style inspiration, I mean, at the very least, look up these film stills, because it's just too gorgeous. But yeah.
Cool. So my last one is my 90s pick.
Oh.
So it's Shallow Grave from 1994, directed by Danny Boyle. So pre-Trainspotting, pairing with Ewan McGregor. And then Carrie Fox is also in it, who I'm actually not sure if she's Australian or from New Zealand, but she was in Angel at My Table by Jane Campion and Last Days of Shea New by Gillian Armstrong. And then Christopher Eccleston is in it as well. He's in just like a ton of shit. If you look him up on IMDb, you'll be like, oh, I've seen this guy in anything. So basically, there are three 90s Gen Xers with a bit of money in that kind of 90s professional way. One's a journalist, one's a doctor, and one works at like a stuffy bank in Glasgow, I think, in the 90s. Beautiful apartment. One of those apartments that you just like couldn't find in any goddamn city in 2020. Huge, vintage, beautiful bedrooms, bright, in this old building with these gorgeous staircases, sparsely decorated, kind of warm tones. It's not like now and everybody's got this fucking white and like two plants. It's like, no, you know, turquoise walls and sort of homey and, oh, there's a kitchen with pepper grinders and stuff like that. So they're living in this big apartment. There's three of them. They're looking for a fourth roommate. The opening sequence is just them being honestly terrible people to a bunch of people interviewing for the extra room. And they finally come across a guy who seems pretty cool. And he charms Carrie Fox, being like, oh, I'm a writer. I've got a cool leather jacket. I want the human condition. And it turns out he's just a criminal with a suitcase full of cash. And it's the 90s Glasgow, so he also dies of a heroin overdose pretty much immediately.
Yep.
And then the roommates have to decide what to do with his body and the cash, because they find the cash right away. Yeah. And these people aren't, they're not necessarily the most moral people. So you just go on an adventure with them while they decide to have their way with things. And yeah, it's just, it's a fun black comedy, kind of a, I mean, I don't want to say thriller, but if you find a suitcase full of cash that someone has clearly showed up with, I can't say, I'm a risk-averse person. I can't say, my first thought would be like, uh-oh, who is looking for this suitcase full of cash?
Yeah.
And then just the way people turn on each other. So it's really fun, but it's also, you know, you got your high-waisted Levi's that are kind of loose and big sweaters with, you know, very grandma sweaters, honestly, on a woman. Great sort of almost unisex haircuts that are a little longer and kind like of that early 90s. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and like a striped t-shirt that's like maybe two sizes too big, like tucked into those high-waisted, baggy kind of Levi's. Okay, that's all. And with the sweater on top.
And then sort of, you know, the lawyer, or no, he's not a lawyer. He's an accountant. Sorry, he's an accountant. It's been a while since I've seen this. Has that very 90s yuppie button down style, very Whit Stillman looking. So it's fun seeing them, you know, go a little hog wild, spend a bunch of money, and go, I mean, for lack of a better word, go nuts. Worrying about each other. So it's a very 90s movie, and I appreciate it because it really immerses you in that time. 1994, just a huge apartment. So you just pull on that big sweater.
People had jobs. What's that like?
I know.
No gig economy shit.
Eating pasta, no problems. Just big plates of pasta. We can have gluten.
We can have carbs, gluten. We have so many jobs.
Delicious. And then there's just all kinds of low-level criminals just in the mix. So I hadn't seen this before this year. And honestly, it was like so fun. I'm just...
into, I'm always searching that high. And I actually think I hit it with these three movies of a movie that's not a significant film. Yeah, it's just a fun movie that was pleasurable to watch and just something different. Like, that's just gave me a little something different. And
that's what I'm looking for.
I do think I was telling my coworker earlier, by the time I talk about any of these movies, I've already, like, talked to people about them because I...
Yeah.
Anyway, I was telling my coworker earlier that if you like the frenetic energy of Trainspotting, but you don't like the gross-out stuff, this might be a good option because it's still kind of got that tone.
Yeah,
there's a great scene at sort of a charity event during a dance that's kind of got like it's like a sexy moment between like a really really brief sexy moment between McGregor and Carrie Fox, and I was like, oh, that'll be the still probably that I post.
I love it.
Okay, we are going to build a pitch, a good one this time. Positive pitch.
Yes, this is meant to be a good one.
And it's a game we play where we each bring elements unknown to one another and pitch something on the spot. And do we have a
working title? So this one's actually relevant to my idea and to our entire theme. So the title that I've usurped that I thought was interesting is Too Beautiful to Die.
Ooh.
It's a late giallo movie set in the modeling world. It's from 1988. Has a lot of stylish facets. I don't know if I'd recommend it because it's got a whole like Me Too horror plot line, which I'm not into. So like I watched it because the still on movie was so gorgeous. I was like, oh my god, what is this? So I watched it a while back. Don't say I'd recommend it, but Too Beautiful to Die just sounded anyway. Sounded prescient to my theme, which is a horror movie set in the fashion world. I mean, easy peasy right there, you know. So we got maybe like runway models are being murdered one by one in like the week leading up to a big New York, or it could be Paris or whatever. Let's just say New York fashion show. So one of my favorite movie subgenres I may mention before is like, and this is like another Instagram I wish existed, how these sort of like art world fashion people like at events, like say there's like a gallery opening or a fashion show, like how movies portray these types of people like at events, like with crazy wild fashion. Like, I don't, it doesn't happen a lot, I guess, in movies. But when it happens, I'm like, oh yes, thank you. Like these are just sort of like crazy characters with these outrageous outfits. So there'd be a lot of that, a lot of like openings and events and just like wild sub, you know, like characters on the sidelines. So basically, it'd be like a better, more giallo version of like Velvet Buzzsaw. I don't know if you ever saw that on Netflix. No. It doesn't matter. It was like a dumb movie, but it was like where like the art is killing people in these different ways, which is, it's like, it should have been more fun than it was. But but this would actually have like a killer. I'm not sure what like the point would be, who the killer would be, but this is the world we're talking about. And I'm mostly trying to think of like outrageous ways people could die, which we can get to, but actor-wise, I think the lead needs, like, the lead, like, main model, maybe sort of, like, the audience surrogate or the lead of this would need to be, like, a newcomer, so I'm not sure about that lead, but I would love to see Rossi De Palma of, like, Almodovar fame, as definitely as one of those, like, I said, like, on the sides, like, these openings, like, wearing outrageous stuff. I would just like to see her in the mix.
Not necessarily as the lead, but not just the lead. Sort of...
She could be sort of like, she could be one of the designers, or she could be, maybe I could see her like a fashion editor or something.
Yeah, totally.
So I just want to see her wearing outrageous outfits. I'm not sure if she still does films. I haven't really looked at her IMDb in a while, but you know,
Come out of retirement if she's.
Yeah, if she is. So I don't know. Do you have any certain.
I just had an actor, which I think tangentially could. But on the episode theme, because he was in that Altman prêt-à-porter, like the ready-to-wear movie. So Rupert Everett.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, where's he been?
Exactly. Right?
I looked at IMDb, frankly, doing like voice work for like Puss in Boots 3 or whatever. Oh. So maybe let's rescue him. And he could, I feel like he'd be great in a movie like this.
As a designer, right?
Yeah, as a
designer that gets murdered like really ceremoniously.
Yeah, I feel like he would be a good, an asshole designer that gets murdered and maybe is one of sort of
climactic murders that help you figure out who exactly is doing it.
Or he gets like shot at the end of the runway when the designer comes out, like does the bow. Maybe he like everyone thinks like, oh, it's part of the show. Like either he gets like shot or he's stabbed or something. Something's happening where they're
Brandon Lee style, right?
Like oh my god, exactly. And everyone's like clapping. Oh, it's wonderful, mm-hmm, you know. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, no, it's not part of the show. And like, he always does this, you know.
Or like he's sort of like an Alexander McQueen type designer, where it's like kind of
it's like, and they're like, oh my god, it's genius. And he's like, no,
then he's
like
dead
save me. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like I said, I'm trying to think of like really outrageous deaths. I mean, obviously the first thing I'm like, scissors, because like cutting fabric. I'm trying to think. I mean, definitely anything you get like wrapped up and like with like fabric like around someone's neck.
There were some crazy murders. Is it Opera, the Argento movie, where people kind of have some clothes sort of related deaths? I feel like my first thought was in, this is dumb, in Beetlejuice, where
that has outrageous, that has some great outrageous art world characters, by the way. That's definitely one of the
what's her name?
Catherine O'Hara?
Catherine O'Hara, the mom, is like, this is my art and it's dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. No, totally. Just exactly.
Like getting pinned by some large sculpture.
Yeah. So maybe the like the murder or the the actual murder is revealed to be like a model that's like, this is what you get for putting me in all these like tight clothes.
Like, I like
some
that.
Sort of like kind of maybe some sort of body shaming sort of like aspect of like, okay, like I mean not to like really shoehorn in body positivity, but I think it could be a part of it. It could be fun. I don't know. I just think that'd be fun. That's pretty much what I want to watch. Every time I'm like, why can't I find a movie, it's a horror movie set in the fashion world. I mean, I'm sure there's some giallo movies out there that reference this, and if you know them, DM us.
I mean, I think that's what Strickland was trying to do with it. Maybe you finish it and you let me know.
Maybe that's what it is. And
but
we,
it's more like department stores. It's not really the fashion world. Yeah. I think you're right. The world is crying out for sort of high fashion ideas. So much of that is so punishing, right? Because it's very punishing of women's bodies.
Mm-hmm. And everyone's like giant bodies. High heels. Like, maybe someone just falls off their high heels and dies. I don't know. I mean, we're getting killed with a stiletto.
With
stiletto. The stiletto that has like a knife edge is like the heel. Yeah. That's the poster.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so it's our radar section, things we've been watching or are trying to warn you against, or things we are looking forward to. So, I don't know, what do you get?
I'll just talk about a couple things because I have their titles written down and I don't want to open my Letterboxd. So the first one, they're just a couple. Well, one was a treat and one was a real, I'm warning you against it. So
okay.
I've got a thumbs up and a thumbs
that's
down.
That's as important, you know?
So thumbs up to Terror Train from 1980, the Jamie Lee Curtis. Okay.
Yeah, I think I've seen this.
So fun. Yeah. So fun. And I don't understand why Terror Train isn't, I feel like it's just as good as those other 80s slasher. I mean, literally just as good as like Friday the 13th or Halloween. It just didn't become a franchise because how could it really? Okay. So the basic premise is that, how do I put this? A bunch of pre-med students in a fraternity decide to rent a party train. I mean, literally, there's like a dinner train and you go on a little route. It's just that, except they're, 1980s, so it's like late 70s partiers in a New Year's costume party. And they're going on this like special chartered train.
Instead of a party bus, it's a party train.
Yeah, but it's a party train, which I'm like, can you still do that? What's going on? Could you ever? Who's to say? But Jamie Lee Curtis is one of the students, the most famous person on the train. And little do they know that someone, a murderer, is on board and has a real agenda of vengeance that they would like to exact on all of these stupid frat kids.
Dumb teens.
And they're going to pick them off one by one. So it's really fun, very 70s. And I have to tell you, the funniest part of all of this is that a pretty sizable role pretty sizable supporting role is allotted to one young David Copperfield, the magician. And probably the what some may consider the weakest parts of the plot, although I enjoyed them very much, are the entire interludes dedicated to David Copperfield just doing magic tricks.
Okay, I have not seen this. I don't know what I'm thinking of, but it's not this.
Yeah,
okay.
There's whole things where they're like, yep, the entertainment that we booked for the train on top of this whole band is this disco magician yeah. who's going to do his card tricks and do his whole thing. And the funniest part is that I don't know how famous he was at the time. Probably not. He's pretty young in this. But he definitely wrote into his contract that everyone has to think he's a real cool dude. And oh Jamie God. Lee's character has to be like, ooh, who's this sexy magician? It's so funny. And like I said, there's whole things where it's just his entire trick. So it's, I mean, I'm not going to turn down a magic trick. And it actually led Joel and I to watch this video on YouTube because Joel was like, oh, do you remember any like the TV special that David Copperfield did where he did this magic trick, like this TV trick where you put your hand on this particular part of the screen and then he guessed where it would end up. It was real fun. I recommend it. I'll link to
that.
Just access that part of our brains. It was a real fun time.
It sounds like a How Did This Get Made movie, as you're describing it.
Kind of. I don't know if they've covered it or not. I actually hadn't heard of it before, but I haven't listened to like all of
I'm a avid listener to that.
Okay,
and
so
if
you haven't, yeah, so you know, it's
might be coming up though.
It's pretty fun,
yeah.
But it's actually, like I said, except for the magic, like it's too good. Like it's just as good as a lot of those other movies, except for the magic. I would argue, but I am not a horror snob, so who knows?
Yeah.
So thumbs down. Mm-hmm. I bet you've seen this movie too, to be honest.
Oh my, what is it?
It's called The Comfort of Strangers from 1992.
Oh shit, speaking of Rupert Everett, yes, James and I were just reassessing our thoughts on that. We saw it a few years ago. Okay,
so
tell me everything.
So that's why I picked him as my actor, and it's him and Natasha Richardson. Mm-hmm. And it's a Paul Schrader movie. The screenplay is by Harold Pinter, based on an Ian McEwan novel, but it is just a hot mess. Oh, yeah. Because just to be clear, Richardson and Everett are this couple and they're in Italy, and I will say gorgeous outfits, mm-hmm. gorgeous interiors, mm-hmm. but they're trying to like, you know, have this romantic weekend, and then they meet this couple played by Christopher Walken and Helen Mirren, I think.
Some other person, I can't remember, yeah.
And Christopher Walken is like at like maximum Christopher Walken, like dialed up to 11, mm-hmm. where you're like, is this, what's that, his bit on SNL? Is it the Continental?
Oh, yeah. I know. Like he's wearing like a linen suit or something.
Being like, my father, he was a real man's man. He used to beat me and hide me in the closet. It's
wild.
We kept watching it because of how bad he was and how ridiculous he was. But the movie is just a mess of these people meeting this couple and having this whole thing. And it's actually alternately boring and confusing.
I know, it's very confounding because it's so wild, but then boring. Yes. And there'll be some gorgeous shots and gorgeous outfits. But then you're like, I don't care about this. It's very strange.
You don't know how to feel.
Because you're like, I think I hate it, but also there's a lot of interesting things. Yeah, it's very, yeah. So if you're into these real weird, this weird nexus of movies like that, then go for it. But I wouldn't recommend it.
It's bad. And you're like, what is Christopher Walken literally doing?
Yeah.
They're just like, go to town. Do you be your most.
He's like, oh, is the camera rolling? I was just being me.
Yeah. But it's fun, I guess. But also, I was really annoyed at the end because it made no sense. So enter at your own risk if you dare. I'm definitely not recommending it. But it's funny to see him. It's really just for his lines, which are so silly.
Yeah, definitely.
That's it.
I know some people are drawn to those, and I guess I'm like that. We're like, oh, someone's like, oh, you shouldn't watch this. It's crazy. I'm like, well, let me just check it out for myself. So I feel like we're just really enticing people.
Yeah, I know. Anyway. It's not like in the where I'm like, I do want people to watch The Baby.
That's fucking
wild
crazy.
And it's fucked up.
Yeah.
This one is just kind of stupid but confusing. So
maybe
if you also enjoy watching with your partner and then talking about how
weird
it's
definitely a conversation starter, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. well, kind of on that, I mean, I don't know if I'd call it a sexy thriller, but kind of in that realm. But this is a thumbs up for sure. I think all mine are thumbs up. I watched, James and I watched this incredible sexy thriller called Malice from 1993, starring Nicole Kidman, Alec Baldwin, and Bill Pullman, I believe, with a script co-written by Aaron Sorkin, which I'm not like a Sorkin head, but, you know, someone that vaguely
competent.
Knows. Yes, competent. So I physically can't believe I had never seen nor heard of this, because it is the platonic ideal of a sexy 90s thriller. I don't want to go into it too much. Yeah, so just watch it. It's real good. I can't remember. We just found it, like, somewhere online, whatever. But Malice. Check it out. I swear, because I'm always... That is, like, every time we're like, hey, let's watch a movie. Like, what should we watch? We're always like, you know, like a 90s... Like, a sexy 90s thriller. Yeah. And, like, we've run out of them. That's why I was like, yeah. I cannot believe not only that we found one, but that it's, like, the ideal delicious. It's delicious. I'll just say that. It's just... Yeah, it's great. So I... Also, as I was kind of watching sort of fashionable things, I watched Seven Women, Seven Sins, a 1986 omnibus with women directors directing a short vignette, each inspired by one of the seven deadly sins. And so the highlights were the ones by Betty Gordon, Ulrika Oettinger, which I mentioned earlier, and Chantal Ackerman. She did one on sloth that was so great because it was literally just her being like, all right, I guess I have to make a film. And she's like, maybe I'll just, you know, make some coffee or whatever. It's like having like a lazy day. It's really great. Wow. So yeah, not all of them. It's like in the omnibus. Some of them are real clunkers, but there's some really fun ones. So it's available on the mystery site. sorry, I'm being so annoying. And if you just want more, maybe basically just an enormous long list of all the films that I find most inspiring and stylish, in regards to like fashion, art, interiors, art direction, I'm going to include a link in the show notes to a Mubi list that I've been working on for literally 10 years, as long as I've been on Mubi.
Whoa.
That it's like my pride and joy. It's like the thing you would save in a fire, except it's online, so I don't have to save it from a fire. But I'm just saying, as far as like, it's my life.
If Mubi goes down, which, if Mubi goes down,
then I'm screwed.
Well, thanks for joining us. You can see some of the outfits that we were talking about in this episode by following our Instagram at Storyboard Podcast or our Twitter at Storyboard _pod. Or you can just email us storyboardpod@gmail.com. Why is this so hard for us?
Well, there's everything's a different
everything's
thing.
Different, you know? Yeah. Come on. You could email us as well to be like, I am too good for social platforms. Please email me these images directly and we can airdrop them to you.
Yes.
Who knows? Yeah, all the links to things we talk about and the very large list of fashion movies that Lars has.
My tome.
will be in the episode notes. Till next time.